I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I am thrilled to be here with you yet again. Another afternoon we get to spend together and talk about the craziness, the nonsense, the foolishness, the excitement, the terror of the upcoming elections and the state of our country. Now, before I do that, I wanted to do a shout-out. Now, the shout-out is to my dad, Joe Pangaro Sr. Actually, he is the second, because I'm the third, and my son is the fourth. And it's pretty funny. My son Joseph, the attorney of record here on Chasing Justice, he's been on a few times, and he's saying that if he has a baby boy, he's going to name him the fifth, which is creating a little controversy in the family because my wife, Miss Kathy, seems to think that's about enough of the numbers. But it's a connection to your past. You know, I always felt connected to my father and my grandfather because I was Joe Pangaro the third. I always thought that was a pretty cool thing to be. My son Joseph, I named him the fourth. He was my firstborn, and I named him the fourth. Now, okay, it's getting a little long. You know, Joseph the 28th. What am I, George Foreman? With all the kids named George, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But the reality is, it does create that connection, and I figured it would peter out by the time my son Joe had a child. But it's funny that it hasn't, because he feels that connection to me and to his grandfather he never met. So these things are important, these connections to family and to history. So my shout out to start today's program is really to my father, Joseph Pangaro II. I've told the story before. My father passed away when he was very young. He was only 37 years old. We were on a hunting trip in northern New Jersey, up in beautiful Sussex County. I was 14, he was 37, and we were hunting up there. And unfortunately, the poor man had a massive heart attack. The year was 1976, and he passed, you know, right there in the woods. I spent the next 3.5-4 hours with him while my uncle, who went down to try and get help, we were way up high on top of a mountain, and he had to go get some help. So he had to get down the mountain, then he had to find help, then he had to get back up the mountain. You know, it was an amazing thing. But I wanted to say, you know, happy birthday to your dad in heaven, because there's no doubt the man is in heaven. He was a loving person. He was a great husband to my mom. You could tell he loved her unconditionally. It was really what showed me how to love my wife, Miss Kathy. And he was a great father to me and my brother, Todd. So I learned how to be a father. I learned how to be a husband. And I learned how to be a man in those very, very short years I had with him. And I just want to say, happy birthday, Dad. So there you go. Now, when I talk about this connection, you know, connections from fathers to sons. My father was an electrician. He was a union guy, worked in New York City, and then moved us to to Jersey, you know, to get out of the city and to get some fresh air and some sunshine and some beach weather for his family. Well, almost all of the family moved. You know, my cousins, all their fathers and mothers, they all moved to the shore. And we had a lot of people down here. We had a lot of cousins, a lot of family. It was really an excellent thing. And we were all connected. So I'm going to bridge that over to say, my father, as an electrician, always said he would like it if I joined the business and it would become, you know, father and son electricians, which gave me, as a young person, something really to look forward to. I thought it was exciting. When I was 12, he would take me on job sites. And you got to go back to the 1970s. That was really the beginning in New Jersey of the condo boom. I mean, there was no condos. They were all single family, small houses. And then all of a sudden, these condos came in. And there was condominiums everywhere. I mean, all over the place. You know, they were popping up because they were lower cost to the buyer. They were lower cost to the builder. But there was a big profit in them because you sold them all at once. I mean, they sold out like immediately. So my father, who had left the union and started his own, put his own shingle out as an electrician, which I thought was a pretty ballsy move, even as a kid back then. You know, we had a okay life. Union man working hard. But then he decided to put his own shingle out, start his own business, him and my mom. And I know it was tough for a couple of years. And then all of a sudden, things took off. These condos came in. And my father had a contract, probably, I can name them now because I put the electric sockets in. That was my job when I was 12 years old. He showed me how to take a box of electric sockets, how you go into the room and there's the hole in the wall, the wire is sticking out, and you throw a socket next to each one and then a plate, and then you go around and hook them all up, and that's what I did. So I can probably name 5 or 6 condominium complexes that he had, all within, 2 years, and there was hundreds of apartments in each one. So that was really a boon to our family. It was really a great thing, and I thought I would love to be an electrician and work with my dad every single day. How great would that be? The next year, I worked that summer, and then the summer of my 14th year, I was working that summer also. Unfortunately, that's the year that my dad passed. As we were getting close to Christmas, actually 2 weeks from Christmas, December 11th, the poor man left us, and it was a difficult time for all of us, for our family. That plunged us into, let's just say, difficult economic times for multiple years. But the connection from father to son, or mother to daughter, or mother to son, we is really amazing, which brings me to another father and son team that we all should be talking about right now. How's that pretty for a pretty slick segue into the world of what's going on now? Mr. Biden running for president and his son Hunter. Now I got to tell you, anybody that doesn't want to see the potential wrongdoing here, the corruption. We've talked about corruption here. What is a corruption? Anyone who's not willing to talk about a corruption when it's this obvious is only because they're choosing not to do so. There's no way you make $175,000 a year as a senator, right? That's all they make, $175,000 a year. And let's say that's $1.74 million. Say $2 million. Let's round it off to $2 million every 10 years. And Joe Biden has been in politics for 40-something years. So say he made $8 million, because they didn't make $175,000 when he started. They made $50,000, $60,000. So let's round it off, give him the benefit of the doubt. He made $8 million. How does a guy who made $8 million over the course of 42 years, how does he afford a mansion and a beach house and the lifestyle that he lives? How does that happen? I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that make less than that, half of that. So if you made $50,000, could you get a $2 million mansion? Would that be possible for you if you made $50,000? Because lots of people make $50,000 and they make $50,000 their whole life. Would you end up with a $2 million mansion and a small beach house, on the ocean, plus living a tremendous lifestyle? Did that happen to you? Would that happen to you? Is it absolutely possible? I don't know. Then we have to look at, just look at the facts and say, well, where did that money come from? Now, we never say that. All of these politicians do this. And I think, give credit where credit is due. Mark Levin has talked about it. Our buddy Uncle Rush Limbaugh has talked about it. The way these things work is, people need things from the politician. Do you ever call your local politician and you want something? Unless you have something to offer them, very rarely will they call you back. When they do call you back, they will take a look at what the situation is. But, you're really just one person. They really don't need you. What they're looking for is money. They're looking for money to run their campaigns, to be able to do what they do. So what people do is that they will, to get that influence, to get that phone to answer when you ring because you want something. Now, if you're in business, if you're in business and there's regulation that's crushing you and you have to do something about it, you need an exemption, you need something in the tax law, you need a regulation to be changed. Well, if you just call up and say, listen, I'm a constituent and this is really hurting my business, whoever answers the phone is going to, the congressman will call you back or the senator will get back to you. You'll never hear from them. They don't care who you are. That's not the kind of system that we have anymore. You'll never hear from these people. You might get a form letter someday. We've taken a look at your concern, and unfortunately, at this time, there's nothing we can do to help you. But if you were to go in there and offer $50,000 towards their campaign, when that phone rings, you might get the congressman on the phone. You might get the senator on the phone and say, listen, this is a problem. Well, it is a problem, and I can see where you're coming from. Let me look into it a little bit. For your $50,000, you might get something. For $100,000, you might get more, right? So how do you funnel money to these politicians without it showing up in their taxes. You know, you want to, I want to see your taxes, and I want to see, what are you going to see, a big line that says graft money to Joe Smith? You're not going to see that in there. But what happens is they give jobs to family members. You know, a family member will get hired by this company or this organization or this government, this foreign government will hire family members of the politician. And they will funnel the money to that person as salary, you know, or benefits or whatever. And then the person who gets it then filters that to the politician. So in the case of Joe Biden, it looks pretty clear, unless you don't want to see it, that there is some smoke. Now, I'm not saying there's fire. I don't know that they actually did anything illegal in the Biden family. But what I can say is, just looking at it, common sense, looking at it with evidence, again, you got a guy who's made $8 million in 40 years and has a mansion, a beach house, and quite a lifestyle. That seems pretty outrageous to have all those things. And I'm sure he has, you know, investments. I'm sure he's up the wazoo. He's living a great life. Every one of those politicians. You know, Nancy Pelosi, her husband, you know, gets government contracts. The other California senator, what's her name out there? Her husband gets multi-million dollar contracts from the government. How does that happen? Isn't it funny? Isn't that funny? Do you get a multi-million dollar contract? Right. So the connection from father to son is really very interesting, because you take care of your kids. You want to take care of your family. You know, the impetus to do this is common sense. The problem is that it's corrupt. All right. So Hunter Biden, who is a kid who obviously had some problems, right? He had problems. There's nothing to joke about a drug addiction. It's a horrible thing. Those pictures that came out of him with crack pipes and all messed up, and that's a horrible thing. I investigate those kind of things, and drug addiction is not only painful and destructive to the person who's addicted, but for the family. The family suffers right along with them, sometimes even more. So I can imagine that the Biden family suffered a great deal with the Hunter's drug addiction, as Hunter did in his family. You know, he was thrown out of the military for testing positive for cocaine. He's had other types of, you know, he was dating his deceased brother's wife. He was cheating on his wife with his brother's wife. You know, the guy's just had, he had a lot of problems. So is this the kind of guy? Is this the kind of guy that has these problems, a drug history, a life that's in the newspapers, that's a train wreck, all kinds of these problems? Is that the guy with no experience in certain industries that a company is going to reach out to and go, you know what? We want you on the board of directors for what we're doing. We think you would be a great member to this team. We think it would be excellent. No, the reality is they would not pick a person like that. So you have to say to yourself, how is it then this Hunter Biden guy ends up with on the board of an oil company in Ukraine, making $50,000 to $80,000 a month? $50,000 to $80,000 a month. Do you make $50,000 to $80,000 a month? I don't know that a lot of people do, and that's part of the problem here. If you don't want to see this potential corruption, it's because you're choosing not to see it. So not only is this kid I call him a kid. You know, he's younger than me, but he's a kid. Now, sure, he does have a legal degree. So it's at one point he had his life together, but his life has fallen apart. So this company gives him $50,000 to $80,000 per month to do what? He was on that interview with ABC, Good Morning America, whatever. And he says, I have no experience in the gas industry in Ukraine. I don't speak Ukrainian. I don't know anybody there. No, I don't know why they hired me. And the woman asked him, the interviewer says, you know, could it be because your name is Biden? He goes, well, yeah, I guess it would be. There's the match. There's the match that lit the embers that start the smoke. Now you start to see this smoke. Why would this kid get $80,000 a month? What can he possibly bring just because his name is Biden? Does that do it? No. The money payoff is to get influence with his father, who at the time was the vice president of the United States and who was in charge of Ukraine policy. See, so, and this is what I'm saying, when you start to connect these dots, if you don't want to see the potential for corruption here, you're missing it. Now, one of the things all the media and everybody lost their minds of with President Trump was that if he owes money. That's why they want to see his tax. If he owes money, if he has business deals with Russians, then he's liable to blackmail. They can go after him because they owe them money. He's connected with them. Here we have Hunter Biden and his father, obviously connected by money, very clearly, to the Ukrainian government. We saw Joe Biden, obviously, on the TV, make a big spiel that he wanted the prosecutor fired. It just happens that that prosecutor was looking into the company Burisma and his dealings with his son, and he wanted them fired, and he held back $1 billion in aid until they would fire this prosecutor, which they did because they wanted $1 billion. There's your corruption. Now, the other things this kid apparently involved in, he decides to start a hedge fund. Have you ever decided to start a hedge fund? Would you like to start a hedge fund? Wouldn't it be a great thing to start a hedge fund? Because, you know, hedge fund people, they have great lives. They get yachts and boats and airplanes. Great lives. But don't you think you need to know something about hedge funds? Wouldn't you think you need to know something about money policy? Wouldn't you know how to, you know, invest and do that kind of stuff? And again, Mr. Biden there and Hunter Biden have no experience in that whatsoever. But this kid goes to China with his father on an official visit and has business meetings with the members of the Chinese military, I believe they are. And he's going to start a hedge fund. And the Chinese invest $1 billion in this kid with no experience, with no skill set in this, nothing whatsoever. Do you think you could go over to China, meet with members of the Communist Party or meet with members of the military, the Chinese People's Army, and go in and say, listen, I'm going to start a hardware store. You think they'd give you $20 for starting a hardware store? How does this kid walk in and come out with $1 billion for a hedge fund? The smoke is there. The smoke is there. It's clear for all to see if you want to see it. Now, how many other governments are they involved with? Who knows? And what I understand is that the deal is, you know, that they pay the son, they give him a job, he gets all this money, and then he gives some of that money to his father, pays his expenses, helps buy, you know, mansions and beach houses and the lifestyle that they all live, right? Not a bad gig if you can get it, but let me ask you, can you get it? Can you go over to Burisma over there in Ukraine and say, hey, listen, I have no experience whatsoever, but I'd really like to be on the board, you know? Like, who's that comedian? And he says, got any more of them $1 billion-a-year jobs in hedge funds? You know, of course, I'll take one of them if you got it. So this is what we're looking at here for the start of this last leg of the campaign. Now, of course, we have seen the October surprise, which for the first time in my lifetime, I can remember, was not against the Republicans. But it turns out that Hunter Biden's laptop, and maybe several of them, were left off at a computer repair store where they fix computers, and it was never picked up. And I'm going to suppose this is just like any other type of a place when you leave equipment somewhere. They tell you if you don't pick it up in 60 days, we convert it to our property because we fixed it or we did whatever to it. We convert it to ours, and they could sell it, part it, whatever they want to do. And he apparently left this laptop there that this named person saw what was on here, a lot of shady dealings, a lot of emails, thousands of them apparently, as well as those horrifying pictures of the kid, Hunter Biden, suffering from drug addiction. Apparently there's thousands and thousands of emails on there that look like they are more matches ready to light the tinder and start the fire. That's going to prove that this is not just a talk about corruption, but it's going to be right in our faces. The question is, do you care? Well, here in Chasing Justice, in our audience, we probably do care. But the reality is, see the power of the media? If the media doesn't talk about it, if the ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, if these people don't come out and talk about it, then it never happened. And everyone can say, everybody looked into it. There's nothing to it. There's nothing to it because nobody's talking about it. Well, the only ones talking about it is Fox News here on Chasing Justice and some other more conservative-leaning people are just asking the questions. If we wanted to indict a president on a phone call, how do we not look into this? Shouldn't Biden be indicted the day he takes office if he wins? That's my question. I want you to think about that. We'll be back in a minute with more of Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends, Chasing Justice with Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. All right, so we're going to continue this journey down, I guess we would call this corruption street. Let's take a look a little further. Now, we saw how the press and the media went crazy when Don Jr. had a meeting with a Russian woman, right? We saw that how they lost their minds. How come they're not doing that now? Where's the interest? Why is there no interest? Well, we could go on and on and beat this thing to death. We know the media is totally corrupt. The media is corrupt. They are members now of the Democrat Party. They are completely in for one side. They're socialist. That's where they want to go. And that's what we have to deal with. There's no credibility to them. There's no credibility to these journalists. So we were kind of on our own here. So my father-in-law, Ted, who's 87 years old and has seen his share of politicians come and go over the years. Ted is, I guess, a lifelong Democrat who in the last election actually saw that, wow, you know, the Obama policies really hurt this country and we need to do something different. And he was all on for Trump. You know, God bless him, this old guy. And he's all on for Trump now, because he sees the difference between what he saw before and this, and he recognizes the signs of growing socialism. You know, this is something we were worried about many moons ago, but not so much anymore. We've softened it. Our media has kind of made it acceptable. Our education system has made it acceptable. It's more fair. It's better for everyone. It's not, there's no greed like there is in capitalism. Socialism is completely fair to everyone. Everyone will split one roll of toilet paper and we can all starve together. You know, that's kind of the thing where we're at with this. But if our media isn't there, Ted asked me a question. He says, Joe, let me ask you something. See, that's a question, right? He says, listen, how come nobody does anything about these people, these corrupt politicians? How come nobody goes after these people who are lying and cheating and stealing right in front of all of us? Hillary Clinton broke all these laws. Why doesn't somebody go after her? And I said, Ted, who do you think is going to go after her? Who is going to go after Hillary Clinton and these other lying, cheating politicians? Well, the only people that can do that are in our Department of Justice, our FBI, right? They're the ones who would go after them. And they've shown no sign whatsoever of wanting to go after this. Matter of fact, they were all in on the coup d'etat against Trump. And those people are still in place. Some of the names have changed, but those people are still there. Look at Christopher Wray of the FBI. You think, you know, if this guy was such a good guy, which I hoped he was in the beginning, he would have gone in there like gangbusters to clean up that FBI. He would have shaken out the drawers and gotten rid of all the dead wood. He would have released all the nonsense to cleanse, you know, the sunlight cleanses, disinfects corruption. You get in there and clean out these people. But instead, we haven't had that, have we? Have we seen him do anything that would be in the interest of justice, that you would get a sense of, wow, how about an investigation? Now we have this situation with Hunter Biden. And if you're going to wait around for him to, if you're going to wait around for him to come out and say, we're going to launch an investigation into this and see what you'd be wasting your breath. There's no way he's going to do that. He has subpoenas on his desk from the Senate about all kinds of the corruption that took place in the coup d'etat. And he's slow walking it. He's dragging his feet. He's not giving up the paperwork. He's pretending it's not there, or he's just ignoring the subpoenas, you know, which is a little confusing. So to Ted's question, why doesn't somebody do anything about this? Well, the people that are there to do it are choosing not to do anything about it. And how do you feel about that? Do you have any power in the situation? Can you make that happen? No. All we can do is sit back and get more and more frustrated. Because if this happened to you, if you did something like that, they would be all over you so fast, you wouldn't have any idea what hit you, and you'd be done. You can't fight the government when they charge you with something. So Mr. Ray is not going to do anything. Our hope in the Department of Justice, Mr. Barr, we all kind of hoped he would swoop in and do the right thing. He said all the right things. But if you'll remember, my Chasing Justice family, that going back since the days that he was first appointed, when everybody jumped up and down, oh, this guy's going to be great. He's honest. He's so fair. He's a ramrod. He's going to go, you know, make sure the Constitution is. I said, you know, I sure hope that happens. I have great concerns that it's not going to happen. That, you know, he is a swamp creature, even though, you know, they don't like him right now. He is of that culture. He is of those people. He served under the Bush administration. So he is a swamp creature. And I think what he's going to do, and I've predicted this all along, and I hope I am wrong. I hope I'm completely wrong. I have a feeling when he finally does come out with his investigation, he's going to come out and say, listen, a lot of people did lots of bad things here. You know, Strzok and Page and Clapper and all these people did very, very unethical bad things, but nothing that rises to the level of criminal charges. You know, so you got one guy at the bottom, low-hanging fruit, who admitted that he faked up a FISA warrant. He doctored it up a little bit to get it in there. He's going to plead guilty. He's not going to go to prison. He's going to get probation for what he did. He fell on the axe. And the rest of them are going to be, you know, unindicted co-conspirators. And they can take that as high as they want. They will never go anywhere near Joe Biden. You will never see anything about him bringing up the Logan Act and him being part of the conspiracy. Even though now we know in their own handwritten records from the head of the intelligence agencies that President Obama was briefed on the fact that Hillary Clinton created the whole nonsense. And we have no idea what that means. Okay, we all know that. And Obama knew it. Everybody knew it. This whole thing was fake. The media, everybody for 3 years knew this coup d'etat was fake. And nothing's going to happen. Mr. Barr, I unfortunately believe, is going to come out and say, like I said, you know, I can repeat it over and over. It's because I'm frustrated too. This is a unindicted co-conspirator list. They all did wrong things, but doesn't rise to the level of crime. Just like they said with Hillary. She did all of these things that would put you in prison for 20 years of your life. But no, she didn't mean to do it, right? And we've talked about that 50,000 times too. That is frustrating. That does get me frustrated. And I can imagine that people like Ted, longtime Americans that have seen good and bad come and go, don't understand where is the sense of fair play and justice. You know, all these people today running around the streets, burning our cities down, screaming about justice, justice, justice. Where is the justice for the political class? For those people that live lives you and I could never live? Where's the justice for those who commit crimes right in front of everybody's face? And we all have to just swallow it and move on. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong that Mr. Barr, you know, I'm hearing rumors that, you know, from these different people that, you know, they seem to know things about the system, that there is a grand jury impaneled, a criminal grand jury. You know, Durham has a grand jury, a criminal grand jury. He's the guy that's supposed to come out with this great investigation. Well, it's not going to come out in the next 2 weeks before this election. You know, we're not going to hear some big information dump and all these people in handcuffs being dragged out. That's not going to happen. You might get it in late November. You might get it in early December. But by then, it's too late. We may have elected the most unbelievably corrupt guy and his family, Mr. Biden, to the presidency of the United States. And what do you think is going to happen to that investigation then? What do you think is going to happen then when they control the Justice Department? See, because we can't really use the levers of power when you're on the right, when you're conservative, you have to defer. But on the left, do you think if they had this information, do you think if Nancy Pelosi had this information, that they wouldn't dump this right 2 days before the election and lock everybody up? Do you think that would not happen? I'm telling you, it's pretty clear to me it absolutely would happen. They would not care what the media said because the media would make it. What a tremendous blow for justice. Look at the save it did for our country to get these people out of here before they could destroy our country. If the bar thing were to come out, the investigation were to come out and arrest people before the election, the media will paint it as this is the most corrupt act of political attack ever before. This is all faked up. Just like they're saying, the Hunter Biden laptops are faked up. Now, the director of national intelligence came out and said, all of that is nonsense. This is not Russian propaganda. These are real laptops that had real things on them. This is not the Putin did not put them on there. But this is Adam Schiff, you know, from his intelligence committee. That's his response to this to these laptops being out there, is that they're Russian propaganda. They're working with Trump, because he's always working with the Russians, to destroy this election, too, and they faked this all up. Well, the director Radcliffe of National Security came out and said, that's absolutely nonsense. We have not briefed anybody in Congress or anywhere else saying that there's anything to do with Russia and these laptops. So that's all a lie. But does the media report it? Not one word. Not one word. Do you think in the last debate that Trump and Biden are going to have, do you think that moderator is going to bring this up? So, Mr. Biden, there's these laptops with this information. And how do you feel about your son? Do you think he's going to ask that question? Absolutely not. I think President Trump's going to be hard pressed not to bring it up. He needs to do it appropriately. He cannot repeat the first debate behavior. I kind of know why he was doing that, but he can't repeat it. He has to learn a lesson from Mike Pence. Answer the question. Let the other person have something to say. And when it's your turn to come back again, redirect your answer. Now you have your 2 minutes or your 3 minutes to say whatever you want. The moderator, like the other moderators, are going to step in to try and protect him. I think that's pretty clear, protect Mr. Biden. They'll jump in and say, something like, Mr. President, that's not what we're talking about. That's not the topic. And he should politely tell them, thank you very much, but this is more important than asking your question about whether polar bears are going to die on little icebergs. We need to know if the corruption of the Biden family is going to destroy our nation as we go forward. Is Joe Biden and his family, are they going to be beholden to all these powers that gave all this money? Are they already in a position to be blackmailed, to provide danger to our country just because of where they are? I think that is probably the more pertinent thing. So I have a feeling President Trump will bring it up, but I think the moderator will certainly protect him, which has been frustrating too. How come there's never a conservative moderator at these debates? I don't remember any of them. Chris Wallace. Well, Chris Wallace is not a conservative. He has proved himself to be a liberal left-wing shill for the Democrat Party. He did nothing but protect Biden. Now, Mr. Trump's behavior was a little tough. Mr. Biden's was a little tough. They were both rude to each other. But we'll see what happens on this last debate before you go make your choice, unless you've already voted. Lots of people have. And then we have the problems of the votes, right? What do you think's going to happen? Did you put your vote in a mailbox? What if they open it up and it sees, oh, you voted for Trump? Well, guess that one disappears. You don't think that'll happen? We see people doing it already. So how are we going to prove what the election is? Thousands and thousands of ballots in Pennsylvania being sent to the wrong people. They got the wrong names on them. It's going to be a nightmare and a mess, and it's just going to be more corruption. So I try to answer Ted's question. You know, why doesn't somebody do something about this? Why doesn't somebody do something about the lying media? You know, look at our social media. Right, social media that had this story in the New York Post, one of the largest papers in the country, comes out with a documented story with information, and they block it on social media, saying that it could be a lie, it's misleading. Did they say that about what we know now is absolute lies, the attack on President Trump? No. Matter of fact, they let every rumor fly. If there's a rumor comes out tomorrow that he cut the tags off his mattress, they will have a congressional hearing, and that's all you'll hear about for the next 3.5 weeks before this election, how he violated federal law by cutting off the tags on his mattress, even though we have no idea if it's true or not. This is where we find ourselves at this day and age. It is hard to see a comeback from this. Now, I'm not talking, you know, the end of the world. What I'm simply saying is our democracy is going to change. We do not have a media that worries about democracy. They worry about socialism. We don't have political parties that are trying to do completely the right thing. It's all about interest. We have politicians that are all about the money and their lifestyles, not about what's doing right for you and me and our families. This is the place we find ourselves in now. And it's, I have to agree with Ted. Why doesn't somebody do something about this? What is it you think you can do, actually? What can you do? Can we do anything? Well, we can call the great Malcolm out loud and complain to him. And if anybody could do anything, it would be the great Malcolm out loud. But other than that, what can we do? We can voice our opinions here on the America Out Loud radio network. We can write to our congressmen. We can send them letters. We can email. We can call the switchboard. Do you think they care about you at all, what you have to say, unless you have a big fat check in your hand? They care nothing about you or your opinion, and just keep it to yourself. You know, the never-Trumpers that are out there, they are betraying the entire freedom movement. They're part of the problem. So I don't know where this is going to go. You know, I wrote an article a few weeks ago about November 4th. You know, where are you going to be on November 4th? And then recently I wrote one, which I got a lot of feedback from, which I'm very happy. Thank you all for everybody who wrote to me about it. Was, you know, how could you still be undecided at this time? How could you be undecided? Go on the platform. You can read it, AmericaOutloud.com. You know, how can you still be undecided? Can you believe that we have less than 2 weeks to go and there are still people that say, I'm going to see this last debate and I'll decide which way to go then? With all the information that's out there now, with everything we have seen up to this point, we've seen the triumphs of President Trump. We have seen, you know, the things that they're saying he did wrong. You have to weigh those. You don't like his personality, don't like what he said, you don't like the accusations. But look at the real things. You know, he was not colluding with the Russians. He did not do it. It was proved he didn't. People tried to take him down. That's up for you to put into place. Is that who you want taking back over the helm of power of our government? People that would do that. Because if they would do that to a candidate for president, imagine what they'll do to you, right? And when they come to you and say, hey, listen, you violated this federal statute on whatever, putting your fence up, you're done. No one's coming to help you. So this is where we find ourselves today. And I'm at a strange place. I'm trying to understand it. I'm trying to put it in perspective. I'm trying to plan for both ways, how it's going to go. You know, I hear a lot of people that I care about, they're saying, well, it's unfortunate that we have two flawed candidates. Well, listen, everybody has flaws. Everybody has problems. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody says and does wrong things. You have to look at what someone has done when they were in the position to make a difference. Not what they said 20 years ago or 30 years ago. What are they actually doing? Right? And that's what I think is your best bet to base things off of. You know, did Trump do anything he said he was going to do? Did he help you in any way? Are you better off today than you were before? Or do you believe that Joe Biden raising taxes and raising regulation and crushing down on business, is that the right way to go? If you think that's the right way to go, then it sounds like you have a candidate also. You know, if getting back at people who have more than you is the most important thing in your life, then that's probably the way you want to go. I would just ask you to say, you know, think that out down the road. How does that work out for you down the road going after people? We already see that people are leaving New York City in droves. Rents are at the lowest that they've been in years. There's 10,000 available apartments in a city where you can't find an apartment, right? All these big cities are losing people in droves because they're getting away from these high tax places. Why do you think that is, right? This is what led to people doing the things they did to move their businesses offshore to avoid these kind of things. But hey, all of us have to make that decision coming up. So listen, I'm thinking about my ranting and raving here, and I got more to talk about when we come back for round three. Ding, 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 here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. Well, AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world. featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. Join us. We're in this together, and we consider you part of our family in our crusade to share the news, commentary, and agenda that can lead America back again. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and this is our finest hour. Okay? So, I meet you here every day, every weekday at 3 o'clock, and we spend time together. We get to know each other. We're learning. We're going through all the things going on. Are you stressed by all of this? Are you feeling down? Are you feeling up? I'm just reading, you know, some statistics, and it looks like Joe Biden's lead in Pennsylvania has completely collapsed. It's down to 1.1% or something. Maybe the corruption thing is starting to have an effect. Who knows? I had heard earlier today that the North Carolina, which is really important for President Trump to win, is now probably outside the margin of error in favor of Joe Biden. So you go figure there. We might be losing North Carolina. We got to pick up something else along the way that has the same number of votes. Either way, it's interesting. You know, one of the things that we're gonna do as we watch these debates, you need to understand how people think. All right. So one of the things that I do is I do interviews. Right. You know that. We've talked about that as a criminal investigator. I do interviews all the time. And interviews are not just sitting down, asking a group of questions and writing down someone's answer and maybe coming up with a crafty follow-up question. The whole idea of an interview is to go from point A to point B. And if you're the interviewer, you want to lead that interview. So when it comes to criminal activity, you know, you know what it is you're looking at. You have to have some facts, though, to guide you in your interview. Otherwise, it's really just a fishing expedition. You know, if you don't know that Bob Smith robbed the bank, but somebody says, hey, I think Bob Smith robbed the bank. So you want to go sit down and talk with Bob Smith. You know, what are you going to say? Hey, Bob, were you near the bank today? Yeah, I was. Matter of fact, I made a deposit this afternoon. Did you rob the bank, Bob? No, I didn't rob the bank. I went in and made my deposit and I left. Oh, okay. Well, some people said they think you robbed the bank, Bob. People be wrong. I didn't rob any bank. Right? That kind of an exchange, that's what a lot of people think an interview is. And an interview is really not that. So the reason I'm gonna cover some of these things is twofold. Number one, when we watch the next debate, I'm gonna give you some pointers to look for as the two candidates answer questions. So the moderator is gonna ask both candidates. And this goes for both people. You know, this will give you some insight into what goes on in people's minds when they're being interviewed and how a good interviewer can look for subtleties in people's answers, all right? I use a term that says words mean things. When people say things, you have to listen to what it is they're saying, try and figure out the context of it, and then put it into perspective in what you're talking about. So there's a lot of technique that goes into being a good criminal interviewer. So one of the things I've done over the years, I teach a lot. I teach police officers, I teach school people, I teach business people how to investigate things in their buildings, their schools, in law enforcement. But one of the most important skills for anybody in any business, any concern, any organization, is the ability to conduct an interview. All right? If you can't interview people properly, you're never going to get the right information. You're never going to get the true story. So journalists are also, you know, interviewers, obviously, right? But if they're not concerned with the truth, then they can create their interview to get the answers that they want. So it's like a pollster. Pollster can ask you questions, are you happy with the economy since the COVID-19 shutdowns took place? No, I'm not, right? And then they say, people not happy with Trump's economy since May. Well, no, it's the COVID-19, but you asked about that, but you spin it a different way. So interview is about spinning, it's about controlling the conversation, and it's about going from point A to point B. So to help people do that, I've written a book, and it's called The Interview. Right? And basically, it is designed to help law enforcement officers, correction officers, anyone who has to investigate anything to understand the mindset of the interviewer and the person being interviewed, to understand the concepts and the techniques that make people do the things that they do when they're interviewed, how to look at body language, how to see what body language tells you when people are answering questions, to tell you if they're being deceptive. You know, one of the concepts is that I ask all the time when I ask these officers, if you find deception in something somebody's telling you, does deception mean guilt, right? So if you would like to get a copy of that book, if you have to interview anybody, if you do investigations in your business, if you are part of an organization that investigates anything, you can get my book, The Interview, by going to looseleaflaw.com, looseleaflaw.com, and just punch in my name to the search finder bar there, Pangaro, and the book will come right up. Now, there's two things you can get there. You can use PTGWB10, PTG for Pangaro Training Guide, Wounded Blue 10. And every book that's sold, the publisher is going to donate $1 to the Wounded Blue organization, which is Lieutenant Randy's organization that helps injured police officers across the United States. So that was one way I thought I could help and give back a little. I could get the information out to the people who need it, and we can help, you know, our wounded police officers across America. So if you're interested in that, make a great Christmas gift, right, for a law enforcement person you know in your life. Or if you have to interview people, maybe you interview people as part of your job. You interview people as part of your school investigator, your private investigator, whatever. This book, The Interview, would really, really help you do what you do to understand people. So when we watch this next go-round of debates, some of the concepts that you really need to understand: what motivates people when they're answering questions, to answer truthfully or to be deceptive, right? So I don't say lie. I don't always say lie. Lie is a specific thing. When somebody lies, it's because they make a purposeful decision to lead you in a different direction. You know, if I'm the bank robber and you say to me, "Did you rob the bank?" And I say, "No, I didn't rob the bank. I saw Bob Smith with a gun, though. He walked in. I think he was the robber." That's an absolute lie, and I'm trying to send you down a different road. Being deceptive is more of a subtlety. So when people are deceptive, they're trying to parse the information they give you so that you can't put them into a corner. They're not making a denial, but they're also not saying they did something. They're trying to walk that fine line, right? Because when you have to interview somebody, especially if it's like these candidates, they're asked a question. "Mr. Biden, will you have more Supreme Court justices? Will you pack the court?" Now, his answer is, "I'm not going to say anything until after the election, because if I do, boy, it'll be on everybody's lips. They'll all talk about it." Isn't that the idea of candidates answering questions of what they would do if they were elected, so we can make a decision if we want that person to be in charge? Isn't that the idea? But the reason you would be deceptive — now, he didn't come out and lie. If he came out and said, "Absolutely not, I will not add Supreme Court justices to the court because I find that to be inappropriate, I think it's not the right thing," and then he gets elected and he goes in, "You know what, we're going to add 6 justices," then he will have lied. He would ruin his chances for a second term. He would probably damage his party. There'd be a huge upheaval of people being very upset by that. So instead of lying, he's parsing his words. What he's saying is he's making an excuse. He's creating a straw man that if I give you my answer, that will become the news story and not the issues that we have to talk about. Well, the issue is, will you pack the court if you're elected? But he doesn't want to answer that. So what we've heard a lot of people say, a lot of people on the right, is that not answering that question is an answer. And in this case, I'd have to say that's true. By refusing to answer it, because if he said no, I'm not willing to do it, there would be what's called jeopardy. Like, jeopardy is what motivates people to answer questions either truthfully or deceptively. All right, so that's the concept you need to understand. Who has jeopardy in an answer? So Mr. Biden by answering that question, if he answered it truthfully and says, yes, I am thinking about doing that. And matter of fact, if I get a chance, I will pack the court with three new liberal justices. That jeopardy that he could experience there is that people who are on the fence, who think that's probably not the right thing to do, will probably say, I'm not going to vote for him. So therefore, he has jeopardy if he answers that question. So instead, he's deceptive. Same way with his base. His base, who are very liberal, crazy, want to have 27 liberal justices in there. If he was to come out and answer that and say, no, I will not increase the number of justices. I won't do it. I don't think it's right. His jeopardy there is that these people could turn on him. His relationship with them is tenuous. They are using him to obtain power. They're not in favor of Joe Biden. They want Kamala Harris. They want one of these other, you know, left-wing people in there. So they're using him as a vehicle to obtain power of the White House. So his jeopardy by answering that question truthfully is he could tick off the people on the right, and by saying he wouldn't do it, he could tick off the people on the left. So he parses his words. Another great politician from our history. Remember he said this when asked a question? I'll try and do my impression here. Depends on what is, right? Depends on what is. Now, is a two-letter word, small little word in our language. And that was Bill Clinton who said that when he was asked the question about Monica Lewinsky in the middle of that big investigation. What was Bill Clinton's jeopardy in answering those questions? If he said he had an affair with Monica Lewinsky, he engaged in any kind of a sex act with her in the Oval Office, he would have probably turned a lot of people against him, including his wife, who would publicly be shamed that he did this, right? The woman who has no shame, who knows all about him, but she probably, you know, we all thought she would be shamed that he did that. She would have to do something public, like leave him or make a statement. She couldn't say, you know, the vast right-wing conspiracy if he came out and said the truth. So his jeopardy was, gee, I could lose a lot of people who believe in me by coming out admitting the truth. So therefore, I'm not going to say I had the affair. At the same time, he didn't want to outright lie because he was under oath, right? So depends on what is. That's parsing a word. He's parsing that word so that he can come back later on and say, well, that's not what I meant. You misinterpreted it. What I said depends on what is. If is means this over here, then I'm just a dopey guy who did something really stupid. But if is this over here, then I'm a bad guy who did something that should be removed from the most powerful position on earth. So this is what you see. Jeopardy is the key I want you to get here. And we talk about jeopardy in the book, The Interview, because it is one of the motivating factors of what creates this conflict in somebody's mind and how they should answer a question. So when we're watching the debate and the moderator asks a question like that, Mr. Biden, are you going to pack the court? When you see his answer, you'll be able to tell by, does he answer directly? Like most of these questions that are asked are direct. Do you believe in global warming? Well, you know, the temperature has been changing. Because if I came out and say, listen, it's not scientific fact, it's theory by a lot of scientists who have a lot of political reasons to talk about it, right? A lot of money is put into it. A lot of governments get power that they wouldn't normally have if we say there's global warming. But if I say there's not any global warming, I could probably tick off a lot of people who would be against me then. So I'm going to say, well, the weather is changing. Answering questions, some questions are impossible to answer directly, but most questions you can answer directly with yes or no. Kamala Harris, will you pack the court? I'm trying to answer right now if you let me, was her stupid answer when she could have just said, no, we would not do that, or yes, of course we will. So do you get the concept of jeopardy? You see what jeopardy is. And jeopardy is one of the many, many different concepts that I talk about in my book, The Interview, which can help anyone who has to interview. You know, cognitive dissonance is another thing. So cognitive dissonance is a term, when you break it down, cognitive means thinking, dissonance means disrupted, right? So if someone's telling you a story that they've already concocted in their head, and they're going to stick to that story, they can answer some questions about it if you ask questions about parts of the story they've considered and they've made up the parts, right? or they've twisted the facts to match their story. So that's what people do. When you ask them a question that throws off that preset narrative, then they get confused. Uh-oh, where is this person going? They start to think, and this is exactly what happens. They start to think to themselves, uh-oh, if I answer it this way, it's going to mean that. If I answer it that way, they can take it this way. What if I answer it this way and it gives them another piece of fact they didn't have before? And all of that thinking, you'll see someone look confused. Now, and I say this as seriously as I can, Joe Biden looks confused a lot of the time. He confuses facts, he confuses names, dates, and places. But he looked pretty good on his town hall thing. He looked pretty strong. I got to admit that. You know, the guy looked okay. But other times we see him, he can't put two sentences together. He gets all confused with everything. So when you see him all confused and bollocksing up that he's running for Senate, when he said it 20 times already, he's running for Senate, or he doesn't know what state he's in, or he gets confused on the name of the the thing. When he does that, that's cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is normally a sign of deception. When somebody displays cognitive dissonance, it's because they're trying to come up with a story to be the best possible answer, as opposed to just saying what you really believe and letting the chips fall where you may. Now, and all politicians do that. All people do that. All people do that. Depending on the situation, you know, you may have a lot of jeopardy if you answer a certain way. Okay, so you will parse your words, you will dance around the facts, you'll try and give yourself wiggle room at the end. I mean, that's what all that stuff is about. So I would strongly encourage you to get a copy of the book, The Interview, from looseleaflaw.com. Give it to a police officer, a security officer, a corrections officer, somebody in your family that you know and love, and see if you can help them be better at what they do. It can also help you to understand what you're seeing when you hear people asking questions. It gives you a lot of insight into the human mind, which is what I dealt with for many, many years as a criminal investigator. So we have covered a lot of ground here today on Chasing Justice. You know, we've talked about the president. We've talked about what it means to answer questions properly. We've talked about the debates. We've talked about the nonsense that's going on with the Bidens and their laptops and the corruption that's going on out there. We have a lot of things to think about and a lot of things to answer for as we decide to cast our votes, because it's going to be the difference in our country, how our country's going to go. You know, so I encourage you to vote your conscience. Vote what you think is appropriate for you and your family and for your country. And however it comes out, we will have to deal with it. That article I wrote about, people being undecided, I kind of find it hard to think that people at this moment really don't know, which means all they have left to do is cast that vote. And in our country, it's already been decided which way we're going to go. All that's left is the counting or the cheating to decide how we go. And on that note, I'm going to bug out of here for this episode of Chasing Justice. I want to thank you all for being here. Remember, you can reach out to me at Pangaro Global. I do love being here. And remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We'll see you the next time on Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.